The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It's interesting here. I've got this smile on my face, and yet I'm thinking about talking about suffering. I actually like talking about suffering. So many of us, I think, come to the spiritual practice because something feels like it's just not right. I mean, it may be a kind of a big thing happening in our lives, a major difficulty or challenge or struggle, or it may be just a feeling that, well, I'm doing everything I thought I was supposed to, and just doesn't feel like, isn't there supposed to be something more, you know? So there can just be a feeling of offness, just a kind of sense that, is this all there is? Is this what being a human being is about? Just going to work and getting money and buying food and making dinner and then going to bed and then getting up and going to work and over and over again. Is this what it's about? Kind of the existential kind of question of our lives. And so I think many of us do come to a spiritual practice with this question. A question about maybe about a deeper suffering, but possibly about just a sense of what else? Surely there's something more here. And this too seemed to be the Buddhist question when he started his journey. He had had quite a pleasurable life, actually, in the palace. He had a good comfortable life, and something just made him wonder. His reflection actually was around impermanence. He said, "Everything here is impermanent, and it's going to change. And why am I investing in finding happiness in things that are just going to change?" And he looked around the world and saw, too, that other people were doing things that, trying to be happy, trying to find happiness, and still suffering, still struggling. There's a kind of poignant question from one sutta. A seeker in the Buddha's day came to him and said, "Beings wish to live without hate, harming, hostility. They wish to live in peace. Yet they live in hate, harming one another, hostile and as enemies. Why? Why does this happen?" This is some of our question too, I think. Why? Why does this happen? In one of the teachings the Buddha offers, he points to the reasons why we struggle and suffer is because basically we misunderstand where and how happiness, true happiness, can be found. And so he points to, essentially what he points to is that we hold a perspective, we hold a view, an idea about how happiness can be found. And we're acting from that idea, that view. But that view is fundamentally flawed. I'll try here, see if that works. And And this understanding around a view that shapes our lives, shapes our actions. The Buddha pointed to view being that the beginning of where our happiness can come from, a true happiness can come from. If we begin to learn and understand the misunderstood perspective and can shift the perspective towards a more appropriate view that's more in alignment with what's actually going on in the world, that things are impermanent, that they are unreliable. This is the basic misunderstanding that we're acting from. While we kind of consciously know in our heads that things are impermanent, and being impermanent, that they don't last, and one of the key misunderstandings is that we basically try to pin our happiness on things that are impermanent and unreliable. They are unreliable because they are impermanent. They're unreliable as places for a kind of lasting happiness because things change. Everything changes. In our experience, everything in our experience, nothing lasts for very long. And yet we still try to construct a happiness based on changing events, try to construct our lives based on trying to find a way to increase pleasant experience and to get rid of unpleasant experience in our life. And this is kind of our usual way of navigating the world. And the Buddha pointed to this being just a basically flawed way to navigate the world. And he pointed to a different perspective, which was around understanding suffering. Understanding this question around why do we suffer? The question that this seeker asked, why do we suffer? The Buddha encouraged us to be curious about understanding it. Not from the perspective that we usually approach understanding suffering, but looking at it from another direction. And so this is turning things around and pointing to what the Buddha called at the very beginning of his teaching, the very first part of his teaching, was an understanding of wise view or right view, a different perspective. It's like a 180-degree shift from our habitual human perspective. And views, you know, views are actually pretty important in our lives. They're an invisible thing, you know, they're something that's just going on in our minds, and yet they shape our decisions, they shape our actions. Here's a quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is a translator of the Buddhist texts. He says, "Our perspectives on the crucial issues of reality and value have a bearing that goes beyond mere theoretical convictions. They govern our attitudes, our actions, our whole orientation to existence. Whether or not they're clearly formulated in our minds, they structure our perceptions, order our values, crystallize into the framework through which we interpret ourselves and the meaning of the world. These views then condition action. They lie behind our choices and our goals, and our effort to turn these goals from ideals into actuality." So whatever our views are, whatever our beliefs are that underlie our basic motivations, our basic direction, they shape the rest of our world. And so pretty much in our views, our worldviews are shaped from our own experience, but also a lot from our culture, from how our parents taught us, you know, what we hear in advertisements, on the radio, just how we interact with each other, the views of our society, they kind of come into our minds just, it's like almost by osmosis. I mean, nobody really sits you down and say, here's the views to have. or sometimes they do, but a lot of what we absorb as views kind of get absorbed from the time that we're children. And one of those perspectives is this perspective that sense pleasure, getting what I want, getting rid of what I don't want, is what's going to make me happy. Having possessions will make me happy. I came upon an advertisement in a magazine. It was an ad for a Ford truck. And it showed a man meditating next to his new Ford truck, and there was a pile of gear, camping gear stuff next to the truck. And the tagline said, "Spence put a new twist on an old philosophy. To be one with everything, you got to have one of everything." This is why he also has the new Ford Ranger, so he can seek wisdom on a mountaintop, take off in hot pursuit of enlightenment, and connect with Mother Earth by looking no further than the planet's coolest four-door compact pickup. He says it gives him easy access to inner peace, which makes him one happy soul. This is a view, actually, that we're laughing, but to some extent we actually buy into this, you know, this sense of I gotta have things, I gotta get things, I gotta, so this view of needing things is deeply embedded in our perspective, in the culture. In the ways that we have found happiness in the past. You know, when we get something that we want, when we find a way to have something that we want, we do get a moment of happiness. We get some time that it feels good to get something that we want. And yet what happens, you know, the way things work is we get something that we want and that lasts for a little while. The having lasts for a little while. Sometimes it lasts for longer. This guy with this Ford truck, it lasts maybe for a little longer that he has this thing. And then it gets a little ding in it, you know, that puts a little ding in the happiness. So the things of the world, the kind of way that we go about looking for happiness, What seems to happen is that we get something, we feel a little hit of happiness from it, and then when that happiness begins to fade, as it does, either because we've had that thing for a while, it's no longer so bright and shiny, or because something happens to it, it actually disappears, then there's a kind of a little bit of a depression of the happiness. And we don't have that happiness from that thing as much as we had anymore. And our minds go something like, well, when was the last time I had something? When was the last time I felt good? Well, it was when I got something that I wanted. It was when I got rid of something that I wanted. Or it was when somebody saw me in a certain way. It was when I got that job or that relationship or that vacation or that piece of chocolate, whatever it was, what was the last time I felt good was when I had something that I thought I wanted. And so we kind of go off in search of something that we want again. Because that's in our minds, it's like that's the best way to happiness. It's like this is as good as it gets. See if we can construct our world, the external world, to be the way we'd like it to be. And this is very common. It's like a human. It's a human perspective that we have this view that happiness comes from this kind of getting what we want, getting rid of what we don't want. It's almost embedded in our organism because it does feel good to get things that we like. You know, there's a kind of a pleasure mechanism in our system. And yet that pleasure mechanism, I mean, one thing that I have seen in my own experience is that kind of seeking for happiness or pleasure is part of a deeper human orientation towards seeking some kind of well-being. And that seeking well-being, that's a wholesome thing. That's a very natural part of our system as human beings, that we kind of gravitate towards well-being. And basically this view that we have that the way to well-being is to get things and get rid of things and create and construct the world, that view of a way to well-being is pretty limited. And so it creates a little bit of sense of happiness at times, but it's not a very reliable kind of happiness. And so this is where the Buddha points to another perspective, another view, one that's not so oriented around having and getting rid of, you know, kind of constructing the external world to be the way we'd like it, but turning towards what's happening in here. What's going on inside of our being that's creating the sense of the feeling of offness? And so the Buddha pointed to in this perspective on right view his understanding around suffering. And it's kind of a radical understanding around what suffering is. I think often we think of suffering as being potentially, you know, physical pain or the painful experience is suffering, or things happening to us potentially. Sometimes we feel like we're the hapless receivers of situations, and that I know for myself, before I started practicing, I definitely had this sense, you know, you made me angry. You know, somebody did something and you made me angry, as if they somehow had the power to push a button on, like I was holding out my button and they were pushing it. You know, that we somehow think somehow that other people have control over us in a way. We think other people have power over our own inner life. And this is a view or a belief that the Buddha really pointed to. This is not actually true. That other people do not have power over our own inner lives. There may be things that people do in the world that are unjust, that are unethical, that are evil. And yet the heart, the inner life, does not have to the heart does not have to have hatred and fear and a constriction around what's happening externally. So this is something that seems so counterintuitive in a way, you know, especially around injustice in the world. You know, it just seems that how could a heart be peaceful and yet taking in the injustice in the world? And my own experience and understanding around this is that the heart that is peaceful, I mean, I think, again, it may be a little bit of a misunderstanding of what peace means in my understanding of what the Buddha is pointing to. That I think we think peace means everything's okay. No need to do anything. And to me, what peace means is the heart is not constricted and not shutting anything out. It in fact, it really takes in the suffering of the world. It takes in both the joys and the suffering of the world, feels it, resonates with it. And when there is suffering in the world, when there is injustice in the world, the peaceful heart is not simply, oh, there's injustice in the world. The peaceful heart then wants to act. The peaceful heart, when it sees injustice, wants to respond to that injustice, wants to act out of compassion, out of wisdom. Out of that peaceful heart, action can come. And so there's a lot of kind of reframing of our understanding that the Buddha points to here in this perspective around wise view. And so the first piece that he points to is, in terms of wise view or right view, is that when we internally act out of greed or aversion or confusion, then that's going to tend to create greed, aversion, and delusion in our own system, and it's going to put it out in the world. This does make some sense to us, I think, you know, when we hear it. It's like we do kind of get it, that, wow, whatever I do, more of that seems to happen. And we do know, I mean, we know kind of intuitively when we see somebody who's angry, it often like provokes anger in us. It's like anger breeds anger. And yet there is some choice that we have, some kind of exploration or opening to the possibility of recognizing that what's arising in here, there is some choice about, there is some capacity to engage with it, not in a habitual way, but in a completely new way. And this is another kind of turning around the perspective of wise view. That the, you know, often when something like anger arises in our own heart, we might either feel like, well, I need to do something about this. I need to express the anger in some way, or I need to repress the anger. And one thing that the Buddha points to around looking at our inner life is to look instead at right neither perhaps expressing the anger nor repressing it, but opening to it and knowing it's there, beginning to investigate this experience of anger itself. What's happening here? What's going on inside? When we look at this, pretty much I think with any struggle or suffering that we're experiencing internally, any kind of reactivity that we're experiencing internally, in my own exploration of this, over and over again I've seen this. I don't this is my own understanding of the teaching. I don't think this is in the text anywhere. But when we have some kind of suffering happening, some kind of struggle or reactivity, that struggle or suffering is kind of composed of different parts, different aspects of how our minds work. And one of the key parts of it is that inside, very deeply, we want to be safe and happy and healthy and at ease. That this is kind of that deep human orientation towards well-being. This deep wish for well-being, for happiness, for safety, for health. This is natural, and this is the framing of this movement of heart towards well-being in the Buddha's teaching is metta is love, is self-care, self-compassion. So this is wholesome. This is beautiful, this wish for well-being and this wish for safety and happiness. And yet that wish for safety and happiness, basically, when we're suffering, basically that wish for safety and happiness is kind of running into what's going on in the world, the truth of how the world is, which is it is impermanent, it is unreliable, and it is often uncontrollable. And so the wish for well-being, safety, happiness kind of runs right into these truths, impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, and there gets to be a big tangle. A big tangled knot. Because, I mean, and if we look at it actually, if we look at something like anger or fear, you know, anger, often there's a sense perhaps of, having been mistreated or that there's a sense of, not having been seen or recognized. And that is running up against the uncontrollability of how people are in the world. Likewise, around fear, you know, that's deeply connected to a wish for safety and the unreliability of the world. And so the wish for safety is natural. And the unreliability is truth. And yet, so our minds struggle with these two. Our minds, like, think that there's something wrong, that these two are going on simultaneously. And this is where the tangle happens. And so we have this tangle going on. And the tangle is the fear, or the tangle is the anger. The tangle is the reactivity. And the medicine that the Buddha offers is the medicine of opening to exploring this pattern, exploring what this is. You know, so we've got this tangled thread, these tangled knots of reactivity, and we might think seeing or recognizing that there are components of the wish for safety or well-being in there, and seeing at the same time that, but what's happening in the world is that things are unreliable. You know, we might kind of somehow believe, or I've seen in my own mind that, if this is the truth of the world, if the truth is that things are unreliable and uncontrollable, then this wish for safety, this wish for well-being, it's not valid. You know, I shouldn't want to have that. I've seen that in my own mind, that it's like I've somehow like tried to land on the side of truth and almost like repressed or denied that side of the equation that is the wish for connection, the wish for well-being, the wish for happiness. And what the teaching actually asks us to do is to open to the what's happening here inside of us. Open to the anger. Open to the fear, open to the confusion, open to the frustration or hatred or rage, whatever it is. And look at it. Be with it. With mindfulness, exploring this experience here. This tangle. The tangle is happening here inside. The tangle is happening inside. And I've also had the feeling at sometimes that when I've seen a tangle like this, you know, rage and anger, I kind of felt like that thing feels so bad. Because when we do start to look inside, when we start to pay attention internally to our greed, aversion, and delusion, we see it doesn't feel good. You know, we do see that it hurts. We see that rage and anger constricts the heart. It's not the heart that's open and resonant and receiving the suffering of the world and responsive to the suffering of the world. It's a heart that's brittle and contracted and kind of pushing through things, not in a receptive way, but in a very almost violent way at times. And so we might see this painful experience with mindfulness and think, well, that's bad. I've certainly had that feeling when I've looked inside, and in particular, early in my practice when I was really observing anger. I looked at it and it's like I felt like the thing was a tumor. I felt like what I needed to do was to get out the scalpel and like cut it out, take that whole thing out and throw it away. But with this understanding that I came to over the years around this, the suffering being this tangle, it's like the tangle, the suffering is composed of truth and love, basically. This wish for well-being is the wish of love, the wish of self-love, of love for our fellow human beings. And the truth, things are impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable. This is the truth of the world. And this tangle is composed of those things. The tangle itself is knots, knotted up truth and wisdom. And the idea of like taking the scissors and cutting the knot out, well, that doesn't seem to work because truth and love are not willing to be cut out of our system. And so the practice of mindfulness, my feeling around it is that it basically begins to create a lubrication to allow these threads to untangle. And then the heart begins to be large enough to recognize both the wish for well-being and the truth of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, that they can exist simultaneously. It's like the heart breaks with these truths and these deep wishes. And in that breaking, there's more capacity for action that holds both sides of the tangle. It holds both the wish for well-being and the understanding of the unreliable, uncontrollable nature of experience. Uncontrollable doesn't mean that we don't try to act when there's something that needs to be acted on. But it does mean that we understand that not necessarily can we control the outcome of our actions, and that we need to be willing and able to navigate the circumstances in the world. So the basic perspective of wise view is around understanding suffering, that it is what suffering is this tangle, this confusion, and that the confusion is based in a misunderstanding that leads to a craving and a clinging to want things to be a certain way in the world, to try to construct the world externally. And so the Buddha pointed to this view around craving being the way to happiness, about figuring out how to construct the world, that this is just fundamentally a flawed perspective. And a different perspective would be understand suffering. In fact, one of the pieces he points to, he says, one of the key definitions of wise view is that we understand the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths, very simply put, are suffering. They're suffering. And this suffering is created by an internal wish for things to be a certain way, not a kind of the not recognizing the uncontrollability of experience. So this wish for things to be a certain way, wish for things to be other than they are, and that the release of that craving creates a deep kind of peace. And that there is a path towards this peace, which is the Eightfold Path, starting with wise view, leading to intention, which creates skillful action in the world, and also encourages us to investigate and cultivate our minds to understand the suffering inside. And at one point in his teachings around the Four Noble Truths, he didn't just state them as being these are things to believe, but they are to be worked with, to be practiced with. And he said we need to understand suffering. And this description I gave, this is kind of my understanding of suffering, the description around the deep wishes being tangled up with the truths. This is my understanding of suffering and my own articulation of it. And it's the understanding of suffering here is that the kind of suffering that can be freed, can be released, is not that when we find freedom from suffering, suddenly the world is going to be perfect. Not when we find freedom from suffering, suddenly we're never going to experience painful things. But that we have a heart that has the capacity to hold it without constriction, without either pushing it away or trying to hold on to it, to fix it in some way. Internally fix it in some way. So this understanding suffering is the first action that the Buddha points to. And this understanding is about looking at it, looking at our suffering, recognizing what's going on. When I started looking at my anger, you know, that was my very first meditation practice. My very first mindfulness practice was looking at anger, because that was what got me into practice, the suffering around anger. And you know, I had definitely put the anger on the other person. You know, it's like, you made me angry, you did this to me, you did it wrong, you are the problem, I need to make sure you're miserable. You know, basically my anger was creating the circumstances where I felt like I had to like do something to the person who made me angry, thinking that they had made me angry. And you know, as I began to explore it, I mean, one of the biggest pieces, a couple of big aha moments as I started to look at this. This was what got me into the meditation practice. You know, somebody sent me a book about meditation when I told them what was going on, and the instruction was like, well, notice your reactivity, see what's happening in there. So basically, understand your suffering. That was the instruction right there. Understand your suffering. And so I began exploring it and looking at it. One of the first things I recognized was that when I started to look at that anger, boy, did it hurt. It was very painful to be angry. The whole system just felt tied up. And I had missed this. I mean, it seems so obvious in so many ways, but my mind was so focused on what I was going to do to the other person and how I was going to make them so miserable, that I was unaware that the anger, my own anger, was making me miserable. Now, part of the reason why this became clear to me so quickly, I think, is because the person I was angry with was about 7,000 miles away. I was in the Peace Corps on an island in the middle of the South Pacific, and the person I was angry with was in California. And it became pretty clear that whatever was going on inside of me was not going to touch that person. And it was like, wow, you know, what is the mind thinking here? You know, what is it thinking that somehow this is going to make the other person miserable? There's no way this is doing anything to the other person, but here I am being eaten up inside. So right there, that was an understanding of suffering that came through just the willingness to be with the pain, the be with the anger itself. I learned in that moment very clearly, this hurts. Right here, this hurts. And then over time, I began to see the ways in which my own mind was feeding the anger, the ways in which my own mind was constructing the anger in the moment. Now, what that person did, I don't think was a good thing to do. I mean, it was not skillful. But that person didn't actually have the power to make me angry, because the anger was being created internally. And through the course of there's probably a couple of years of working with that particular anger with that particular person. And over the course of the time, I began to see it begin to release and let go slowly, gradually. It got weaker and weaker. And finally, it disappeared. It's gone. It is completely gone. There's no shred of it left. And there's just the wish for the other person to be happy. Now, that person is not in my life right now. I do not particularly want the person in my life. You know, it'd be okay if that person came back into my life for some reason, but you know, it's not the freedom here doesn't feel like it has to do much with the other person and how that person is. It's more to do with the inner understanding of what anger is, how it was made, what was going on around it, and the kind of freedom that came with exploring it, opening to it, being aware of it. And I have seen also in my experience, that one in particular was more freed while, you know, just through the looking at it. I didn't end up, you know, taking much action around that particular situation. There are other situations that I've been in where I investigate what's going on. I look at it, explore the pain of it, and recognize as the heart gets more free around the pain of that situation, that there is an action that needs to happen. It comes from a different place than from hatred or confusion or self-righteousness or any of the reasons why we might act unskillfully or from our own agenda. And that we can see that as we begin to really explore, you know, what is this suffering? What is this inner experience? Now, it's connected to what other people are doing, but what's the inner experience of it? When I've explored that very, very clearly, and over time, this can, you know, 2 years for that first anger. A recent situation I was in, it was overnight where something happened, and I felt a lot of like self-righteousness and a sense of not being clearly seen and a sense that I needed to justify myself. And at some point in feeling all of that and feeling the pain of all of that, recognizing, oh, here's the peace. Here's where the kind of crux of the suffering is, and there is an action that needs to come. And with that understanding, oh, this is the action. There were multiple different actions that went through the mind in this situation, and with each one, it's kind of like, oh, you know, that still felt the contraction. At some point, the mind came to this other action, which was very simple. It was like the whole heart released and felt like, yes, this is the action that needs to happen right now. And that's what I did the next morning. So I really want to emphasize the perspective of right view, this perspective, the shift of perspective around suffering and exploring it internally, doesn't mean that we wouldn't act in the world. And yet, it may mean that we begin to open to acting from a different place, from a different perspective, from a heart that's more soft and connected and less defended and constricted. So that's probably enough for me. Are there any comments or thoughts or questions about anything I've said or anything at all? Okay, well, we can just sit for a minute, a few minutes here. Just letting the words go. But opening to however you are right now. Maybe connecting to the heart. How is the heart in this moment? And however it is, whether it feels soft or constricted, whatever the feeling is in there, seeing if there can be a possibility of allowing however it is. This allowing approach, allowing attitude of being with experience. Even if it's constricted or uncomfortable, even painful. Exploring the possibility of maybe a bigger container that can hold that. Not resisting it, not fighting it. Not pushing it away or sinking into it. But seeing if there can be a sense of friendly holding. Whatever is there. Kindness to ourselves, to our own human foibles, our own human beauty, We all have a mixture. In our mindfulness practice, we are exploring opening to the fullness, the entirety of our human experience. Whatever it is. Nothing left out. Everything included. Allowed. This movement to witness ourselves, be with our own humanness, is one of the kindest things we can do. For ourselves. As human beings, we so deeply want to be seen, connect. And so often we miss the opportunity to see ourselves, deeply, deeply see ourselves. And connect with ourselves. Thank you for your attention.